And we are live. Welcome, Richard South from TSO to DigiGo's first podcast. How have you found the show so far, Richard?
Good. Well, we've just met, so I'm comfortable. Lots of people here, so.
Yes, definitely. So we are on day two of DigiGo. Yesterday we had an amazing day. It was a blast, really. Lots of attendees, lots of public sector, central and local government attendees coming through the doors and networking, speaking with plenty of sponsors. And TSO is kindly a sponsor of the show this year and have a stand close to the government village. So firstly, Richard, let's get right into it. So I'd like to ask you a little bit about unlocking regulation, because I know that's what TSO is all about. So why is that so important right now?
So there are a number of reasons, but I think one of the most important is that regulation obviously is something that impacts on individuals and businesses in the UK and elsewhere. And there's big pressure through government on regulators to encourage businesses to grow now and enable business growth. So unlocking regulation, we'll talk more about what we mean by that, is part of the process of making it easier for regulated organisations, and most businesses, for example, are regulated in multiple ways, making it easier for them to comply with legislation, so reducing the regulatory burden and allowing them to focus on growth. It can also be directly supportive of growth. For example, if regulators regulating the composition of materials that are used or products that are manufactured, and that can give new entrants into market common standards to work to. If they're easy to find, easily available, then that means you, if you're a manufacturer or you're a business regulated in that way, you can accelerate your growth. So particularly relevant from that point of view at the moment. I think the second big reason is that the way people access information, and that would include where they go to understand what regulation is, has changed vastly and dramatically over our, certainly over my working life. And we're now at a point where, and we're going to no doubt talk about AI, and AI is, you know, fundamentally changing the way we do things, the way we access information. So it's really important that regulation is unlocked, by which I mean coming out of unstructured fixed formats, being unlocked for AI, for machines, and for people using different media to access regulation to find.
Yes, definitely, and particularly sort of making this complex information, lots of regulation, the standards, the guidance, all sort of quite clear and easy to understand. It's been part of your history, hasn't it? And part of your mission as a company for many years. Do you want to touch on briefly sort of where this has come from? I know you had a history in publishing. Would you like to touch on that briefly, Richard?
TSO, I mean, we're a publishing business as well as a digital business. But publishing is about making information available, right? Making it it easy to find information, making it easy to use information, making it easy to understand information. And TSO has worked with regulators, with clients in the public sector, some clients in the private sector for many, many years to do that. This is inherited from the HMSO, which was part of government many years ago. And I first joined the company nearly 30 years ago, after it had been privatized from government. And even then, we were already creating content in digital formats. So then it was CDs predominantly, but we were starting to look at the challenges of digitizing information and digitizing data. On my personal journey, I was in TSO for some time, moved on to other parts of the Williams Lee Group that owns TSO, worked elsewhere, and I came back to run TSO 2 years ago.
Right.
And it was great to see the progress that had been made in that time on the goals and objectives that we'd set out when I was last there. But 15 years ago, we worked with the National Archives to digitize legislation, and the UK was the first country to turn legislation into data. Now, this is now something that other countries have done. Regulators all look to try to turn regulation into data, not just into published content. And turning legislation into data back then was absolutely about making it usable, findable, accessible, but also meaning that third parties could reuse that content, could reuse, in that case, legislation, and create services and access to that legislation for user groups on whom they were focused. And that project that TNA have led has gone hugely well and has led to more and more legislation being accessible, digitized, presented as structured data. but many, many more jurisdictions internationally, globally have followed that example. Many more regulators are looking to do that. So TSO's journey has gone with our clients, really, and with the customers of our clients, so the people who need to access that information and access that data, who, in the context of what we're talking about, would be people who have to follow regulation,
yep.
organizations that have to follow regulation because they're regulated, and intermediaries who use that information. So we've always got to be mindful that we work with our clients who are regulators, but their customers, their users, are take many different forms. So they can be people, they can be organizations, they can be machines, they now can be artificial intelligence.
Yeah, definitely. You mentioned there as well, turning legislation into data. We're ahead on the global scale or internationally. And like, has that always been the case? Is that something?
Yeah, well, I'd say UK was the first country to do that, led by what's now the National Archives and the team there. We've been very privileged and lucky to work with them on that journey, providing support for the publishing and for the digital platform that publishes that data. But more countries, more jurisdictions have subsequently done that, and it's now an expectation that content is published digitally, but not necessarily as data in the structured format that legislation was. We always recommend to regulators that they do aim to do that. Otherwise, you tend to end up with information locked up in fixed formats like PDFs that are really just digital versions of paper, digital versions of books.
100%. And that kind of comes into the sort of unlocking regulation topic, which we have discussed a little bit. So in your mind, what is the biggest barrier public sector organisations face in making that regulation more usable? Is it finding it? Is it understanding it? What are the big barriers?
Sort of take the question apart a bit. You asked about the barriers to public sector organisations using that information. So I think that if you think of typically, the regulation is created by a regulator, which will generally be a public sector organisation, but maybe an industry regulator, or maybe a regulator where a number of organisations in the industry have come together to self-regulate. The regulator's creating rules. Now, the biggest barrier to their success is people complying with that regulation. Yeah. So, what are the barriers to compliance? Well, people finding it difficult to understand regulation. People and organisations not knowing where to find regulation, being able to find regulation in formats that work for you. So these days, people ingest and understand and absorb information in different ways. So 30 years ago, everyone might have reached for a book or a printed version.
Yep.
Now, increasingly, very few people want to do that. And younger people who come out of university today will use digital products first. So regulation needs to be shared and expressed in different formats. So, for example, turning regulation into content that can be presented in e-learning and digital learning formats is a big focus for regulators now, and one of the many ways that TSO tries to help regulators. So the barrier is really risking regulation being locked up in formats that people can't find or can't understand or find it difficult to work with, which then adds cost to organisations that regulate, so makes it harder for people to understand regulation that's relevant to them.
Yep, okay. That makes sense to me. And does that come into sort of the structured contents, and how is regulation easy to access if it is then structured? Is it easy then for you to map that so that people can then, it's searchable?
Well, and to try and put it fairly simply, by structured content, we mean that when you actually articulate, let's say, regulation, turn it into words, would have once said words on paper, but now let's just say words, you could just have a long passage of words, or you could break down the structure, which is what you need to do, of that regulation into its different components. So it's think in terms of a traditional document, headings, subheadings, paragraphs, and so on.
Yep.
So you start by having that right structure that can be recognized by machines as well as by people. Creating a consistent structure in data then allows you to add metadata, which explains what is happening in that content. So that particularly so that machines and other systems can understand it. So by saying this piece of information is a date, this is a location, this is a jurisdiction, so you think about legislation and regulation. where is this rule applicable to? When was this rule applicable? When did it stop being applicable?
Yeah.
Who is it applicable to?
Yeah.
In the subject of that regulation, what do we mean by that? If it refers to a product or to a thing, what is that thing? Is it a material? Is it an animal? Is it
Once the regulation is mapped and it's got structured content,
yeah.
that is then easier sort of to crawl or to put into a large language model.
Yeah, for third parties to find, because when they're searching,
yeah.
whichever search terms they use or whatever criterion a large language model uses,
yeah.
it can be disambiguated. And it's particularly important for regulation because in a world of AI, one of the things that AI really struggles with is time application. So you can say to AI, what is the law? What are the rules on this? But can that AI
capture it at the right
accurately
moment?
Tell you yeah. whether that's the law now or whether it was the law or whether it's going to be the law?
Yeah.
And at any given time, there will be rules published that are either what was relevant at a point in time that's passed yeah. now or what will be relevant in the future. So providing structure to the way you present that data and providing metadata to explain it means that AI can disambiguate it.
Definitely, and it could get you in trouble that really, couldn't it?
It's very important for lawyers, you know, or for companies looking at whether they comply with the law. So they have to know what the law was at the time something happened or didn't happen,
right.
rather than what the law is today.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I'm glad you brought up AI because it's obviously a huge topic at the show this year. We've brought an AI theatre to the show floor, which has been incredibly busy yesterday and has been so far this morning. I wanted to touch on quickly, in your view, what kind of value do you see AI unlocking for the public sector as a sort of a broad question, a broad starter for 10?
Look, I mean, that's just such a huge question. I'll stick to, you know, areas that I'm close to.
In your remit, yep.
Work with more. So in my work and in the work of TSO, we need to understand that a lot of information we share on behalf of our clients is going to be used first by AI and second by the people who are using AI to understand it.
Mm.
So that means we have to think very carefully about how information is published, to use that word, and how it's structured, to talk about the things I've been talking about. But also, we think about, well, how can AI help us to do that? So these days, AI is opening up all sorts of opportunities like coding, for example, to
yep.
reduce the time and cost to code data, to code content. AI is also helping all of us to access information more quickly and share information more quickly. So that's absolutely relevant to us all the time. You see some of the things that are happening in different jurisdictions. I think as an example, was it in Romania recently where they're using an AI minister to make decisions?
Yes, I saw this recently,
and prevent corruption. And it's fascinating looking at how AI can enable things to be done without some of the risks of humans interpreting information,
yeah.
humans using and accessing information. So I think being aware of those sort of trends and where things might go is also critical for everyone. I think what we have to understand is that AI is going to affect every area of our life. It's already affecting every aspect of our
100%.
Life. But how do we make sure we're creating an environment where AI can do its job accurately and effectively, particularly when it comes to
yep.
reusing information?
And how do you feel AI will change the landscape of regulation? So regulation has been sort of trying to keep up with the pace of change of AI. And recently, as in sort of 6 months ago, the AI regulation from the EU we've seen. But like, how do you see the landscape of regulation changing?
Well, you've touched on the regulation around AI. And how AI is used, and I think we'll see much more clarity around that. And organisations, particularly organisations that operate globally, I mean, TSO is part of Williams Lee, which is a global organisation,
yep.
we're no different in that respect. You have to understand what the regulation says about using AI in different jurisdictions in different countries. But also, I think as we've touched on a few times, AI is going to be critical in helping people to understand regulation and
better.
Whether they're complying with regulation, because yep. people use AI to understand what is relevant to them from multiple sources of regulation and multiple regulators. And that goes back to my point of, if you're a regulator, you have to think about how you're structuring and sharing and publishing regulation so that those AI agents can aggregate it and understand it and share it with us as users more effectively.
Yeah, definitely. And we're hearing more and more at the moment, this year is the year of agentic AI. Do you have any thoughts on how agents are going to transform the public sector? Is the use of agents just going to really sort of amplify the kind of productivity within public sector? Or are we sort of yet to harness that really?
Well, I'm absolutely sure we're yet to harness the full potential.
Oh, yeah.
We're just at the foothills, really, aren't we? But I would expect to see AI agents having a role to play in almost every aspect of public sector life as they are in private sector life.
Yeah.
And I think looking at how that future develops, I think the focus has got to be on what more can we do with AI, not just how can we replace people doing tasks in the same way that we do them. So whether it's our example of a regulator or an enforcer of regulation that's uncorruptible because the AI has been correctly coded. I mean, loads of issues involved in that, but whether it's something at that level or whether it's at a more individual level where an AI agent is helping you assemble the components of information and activity that you need to do your daily job. Mm. I think we're just going to see it growing and growing, but it will evolve as digital did as a concept whenever that was 20 years or 30 years ago. It will evolve into something that's just a given in how we do things rather than where we are at the minute, where everybody is focused on how do we use AI, what should we do with AI. Mm. It will become a day-to-day thing. We won't be thinking about AI as much as what we're doing with it.
Yeah, it's more of a normal part of the process, so it's less of a thing we need to sort of
exactly.
speak about. So I completely understand that. So you mentioned, Richard, you worked at TSO, you went away, then you came back, and you're now CEO of TSO. I wanted to touch on briefly like some parts of leadership that you think might be valuable to others. So as a CEO, what kind of principles or rules that you stand by that you think may be useful for others to hear? Like, what makes a good leader in a position like yourself over a company such as TSO?
Well, that's a big question. So, I mean, I think as you develop your career, as you move through your career, you have to understand that the balance between management and leadership changes. And as your role becomes more one of leadership rather than you being the person who does the things that you have
doing.
To need other people to
yep.
do. You have to understand, I think, what people need and expect from you.
Right.
So, I mean, if there's one thing I'd share, because I do share this with people and people who work for me or people who talk to me about leadership, it's to try to think in terms of the expectations of the people you lead in you as a leader. You're not there to be you. It's not about you once yep. you're in that role. It's about the role you need to play, what your company you work for needs from you, because we work for a company
yep.
who employs us, whether we're the CEO or you're a manager of two people, but also what do those people you're leading need from you. But part of that is trusting the leaders you have around you
mm-hmm.
to lead their teams and to be accountable for what they do. So focus on encouraging accountability and ownership and bringing together a group of people as a leader who are pulling together on a common task but bring different perspectives,
yep.
diversity of thought,
yep.
as well as diversity in every sense,
mm.
so that you're challenged as a leader, they challenge each other, and you add value and grow together as a team as well as growing the organization that 100%. You're leading.
I think you hit the nail on the head there with really being challenged yourself opens up more avenues of thought, opportunity, and creates that discourse in order to get to where you need to be. So rather than sort of leading from the top and setting a directive, it's always important to be challenged. And I think trust comes into that as well. And you've already picked out a couple of the key themes from day one of DigiGov in terms of that trust and collaboration, diversity. We've heard that in the Citizen Experience Theatre, definitely, and a couple of others as well. So just to touch on before we finish, so you're here for day two of DigiGov. Is there anything you're particularly looking forward to? What are the key things that you're looking to really grab from today? And hopefully, is there anything that you think might inspire you as you walk around the show floor today?
Because as a supplier to public sector organisations, we get to meet suppliers and talk. I'm sorry, we get to meet potential clients and talk to them about
yep.
what their expectations and needs are going to be going forward. But you also meet other suppliers in a very collaborative environment
yep.
and hear about and see what other people are doing. And that's very important for the economy, for the market, but for government as a buyer as well, that its suppliers are coming together at events like this,
yeah.
and that they're being quite transparent and visible about what they're doing and what their goals are and what they're offering. And, you know, I always find at events like this, you get to have conversations with people in a relatively relaxed format.
Yeah.
It's good for networking. And frankly, people don't meet enough these days, in my view. There are good reasons for it, and it works, but so much of what we do is done online and digitally through Teams and other media now. So when you come to an event like this, you meet people face to face, having real conversations, and we don't get to do that enough anymore. So, I mean, that's a big benefit. 100%.
You mentioned there, it's like speaking to some suppliers as well, you find value in, as well as sort of meeting with and networking with the public sector attendees at the show. If you were to bump into a supplier, perhaps not in publishing or regulation, perhaps outside of that realm, and they weren't at the show this year, what would you say to them to convince them to come and sponsor a show like DigiGov, and what are the real benefits that you might get out of it?
Look, I'd say come to an event like this because you're going to see lots of other people in your marketplace and understand what they're doing, and you're going to get ideas from them and share ideas from them. I'd say you're also going to meet organisations, the kind of organisations you hope to work with, so yeah. you understand more about their goals. They're looking to meet you and talk about what you can offer. I think if you take that up into your point about sponsorship or actually having a stand at an event like this, it means you've got a location that people can meet you at. It means you've got a base for that period of time. It means you've obviously got brand prominence when it comes to things like what we're doing now. People can see your logo, recognize that you're active in the space, think about you when it comes to looking for potential suppliers for new opportunities.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much, Richard. I appreciate you taking the time to sit down with us today. I know you're busy. You've got a couple of engagements that you need to be at today. So, yeah, I want to thank you for your time. It's been great to hear about TSO's journey and the future of regulation as you see it, really unpick what it is TSO does and provides for the public sector and the kind of challenges that it looks to solve. So we're looking forward to welcoming TSO and Richard back for DigiGov in 2026 on the 23rd and 24th of September in the XL London. And yes, I'd like to say finally, thanks for joining, Richard. Do you have any last thoughts you'd like to mention?
No, just thank you for conversation, Piers. It's been enjoyable. I wasn't expecting to do this when I left home this morning, so it's great to get the opportunity to
definitely very impromptu
to have this conversation this morning. Look, it's an exciting time for companies like TSO at the moment because there is so much change. We feel like we're on the forefront of it. We're clear about what we bring to it. We're clear about what we can offer to our clients, and we enjoy doing it. So, you know, if people would like to learn more, come and talk to us today.
Well, you can tell that you enjoy it. There's a passion. There's a big grin on your face. I could see it in you. So, yeah, thanks for joining us, Richard, and enjoy the rest of the day.
Thank you, Piers.